wanted to read something from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from chapter 86. It's almost from the 10th canto. It's almost one of the last chapters of the 10th canto, because 10th canto has 90 chapters, so 86 is towards the end. Text 52. Deva kshetrani tirthani darshana sparsana archanai sanai punanti kalena tadapi aratamikshaya. One can gradually become purified by seeing, touching and worshipping temple deities, places of pilgrimage and holy rivers. But one can attain the same result immediately simply by receiving the glands of exalted sages. Brahmana janmana sreyam sarvesam praninam iha tapasa vijayantuscha kimumakariyayita. By its very birth, a Brahmana is the best of all living beings in this world, and he becomes even more exalted when he's endowed with austerity, learning, and self-satisfaction. What to speak of devotion to me? Na brahmanam medaitam rupam medsat chaturbhujam sarva vedamayo vipra sarva devamayo yamayam. Even my own four-armed form is no dearer to me than a Brahmana. Within himself, a learned Brahmana comprises all the Vedas, just as within myself I comprise all the demigods. Duspragya aviditvaevam avajanti asuyavaha gurumam vipramatmanam archadavijatistayaha. Ignorant of this truth, foolish people neglect and enviously offend a learned Brahmana, who, being no different from him, is their spiritual master and very self. They consider worshipable only such obvious manifestation of divinity as my deity form. Chacharam idam visvam bhavihi chashetava madrupanity chetasi adatte vikramatiksaya. Because he has realized me, a Brahmana is firmly fixed in the knowledge of everything moving and non-moving in the universe, and also the primary elements of its creation are all manifest forms expanded from me. Tasmat brahmarisim etam brahmanat sradadhyarjaccha evam chit akchitos miyata nanyata bodhibhutili. Therefore you should worship these Brahmana sages, O Brahmana, with the same faith you have in me. If you do so, you will worship me directly, which you cannot do otherwise, even with offerings of vast riches. Sisukuvaja saitam prabhunadista sada krishnam jijottamam arajekatma bhavena maiti laschapasatkatim. Sisuka said, so instructed by the Lord with single-minded devotion, Sutadev worships Sri Krishna, the topmost Brahmanas, accompanying him and King Bahulaswata the same. Thus, both Sutadev and the king attained the ultimate transcendental destination. Evam svabhaktayo rajan bhagavan bhukta bhaktiman usitvadishya sanmargam punam dvaravatim agat. O king, thus the personality of Godhead, who is devoted to his own devotees, stayed for some time with his two great devotees, Sutadev and Balasva, teaching them the behavior of perfect saints. Then the Lord returned to Dwarka. So in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, we are finding that Krishna travels along with a group of sages, including great personalities like Narada Muni, like Vyasadeva, like Brihaspati, and many other sages. So in this way, Lord Krishna, along with his great, pure and exalted devotees, was purifying the three worlds. And Lord Krishna particularly went to Maitila to meet two personalities, two of his devotees. One was Bahubasa, who was a king, and the other one was Sutadev, who was a Brahmana. And both of them were great devotees. And Krishna, knowing this very well, went to meet them. Because Krishna is attracted by his devotees. So it is said that when Krishna came, both the Brahmana and both the king spontaneously came forward and they invited Krishna. And Krishna then, he expanded himself unknown to both these personalities, and he entered into the house of both, but they didn't see it, that Krishna also was in the house of the other. So in this way, Krishna was simultaneously in the palace of the king, and also in the very simple dwelling of the Brahmana. And also the sages, some of them were present in both residences. In the residence of the king, they were offered opulent seating arrangements, and they were just received very nicely, with very nice facilities. But however, it is said that the king had in his mind planned to make so many arrangements and say so many things, but first of all he offered his obeisances, and in the process of offering his obeisances he just forgot to get up. He got so absorbed in offering his obeisances that it took a long time for him to get up. The Brahmana, on the other hand, he forgot to pay obeisances. And instead he started jumping up and down, waving his chadar in the air in great ecstasy. He didn't have opulent royal seats. He only had a few kusa mats, and he even borrowed kusa mats from neighboring brahmanas to sit all these exalted personalities in his home. But each of them fully worshipped Krishna according to their means, and each of them glorified the Supreme Lord as the only shelter. Then the Lord spoke and said to Sutadev, he said that actually, it is through these brahmanas, through them, that we can get, through these sages, that one becomes purified. Because these sages, they have pure devotion to me. So, yes, Madhbhakta Pujya Vyadika. It is through the worship of such saintly personalities that we can very quickly be purified. More quickly than by touching the deity. More quickly than by bathing in holy rivers. More quickly than visiting holy tirthas. Simply when the sages glance upon us, especially if they do so while being pleased with our service attitude. And in that way, we depend. We depend on blessings. Spiritual life is very much depending on blessings. We seek blessings. Therefore, in order to receive blessings, one must develop humility. One must learn to bow down. Bow down to the sages, bow down to their learning. Because that learning is representing Krishna. Therefore, we hear again and again from saintly personalities. Yes, through that hearing, we attain certainly transcendental knowledge. But more than that, we also attain their blessings, their prayer. The saintly personalities are always preoccupied with elevating the general populace of the earth, somehow or other, to elevate and uplift every living being as much as possible. The sages are simply preoccupied with this one work, to be the well-wisher of all living beings. And thus, the sages elevate the world at large. Those who receive their blessings immediately receive the mercy of the Lord, because the blessings of the sages never go in vain. Whatever is spoken by saintly personalities, Krishna will automatically uphold it. So this is an important principle. Srila Prabhupada based his entire movement on this principle. Because after all, who had the qualification? Who was suitable? When Prabhupada first started preaching, he came to New York, he did not have a place of his own. But he did some programs in an artist loft. And so many young people had assembled there, and they were all there, and there was a journalist who came to meet the Swami. So when he came, the loft was filled with people, and he saw on the other side this personality, elderly, saintly looking, learned also, very scholarly, dressed in saffron robes. And he walked across the crowd of people, and just like Stanley and Livingston, he said, "Swami A.C. Bhaktivedanta, I presume." Then, and then Prabhupada acknowledged. And then the journalist asked his first question. And he said, What are all these people doing here?" And Prabhupada said, "I don't know." He said, "And they don't know either." And that was the situation. Somehow or other they had come. Somehow or other, by some arrangement of the super soul, who had interfered within their life, who had interfered from within, and the super soul had guided that those living beings, those people, to Prabhupada's feet. But they didn't know who he was. But maybe somehow or other, some curiosity, maybe a friend had taken them. "I'm going to this lecture, want to come?" Or, "Guess so." Yeah, kind of shape thing. Somehow or other, for various reasons, they were there. Some had heard there was some free food. That was a good reason to go. So whatever the reasons were, they were there. And most of them had either recently taken drugs or sometime before, and as a result, all were a little bit hazy, to say the least. "Wow, man, far out." In this way, there was cosmic consciousness and not many people with their feet on the ground. But it didn't matter, because Prabhupada came and carried his blessings. He came, he carried his prayer. He carried that prayer that somehow or other, my dear Lord, please allow them to go forward. We don't know what happened to all those people who were there on that loft. We could not follow what happened to them. Some of them may have at the time become followers of Prabhupada. Some of them may have actually continued to listen to lectures of the Swami, and some of them may have actually joined his movement. Some of them, from those early programs, may have even later become initiated and whatnot. Others, they may have just disappeared in oblivion. Now, so many years later, now 50 years have gone by. So we understand that after 50 years, quite a number of people who were on that loft will not be in the same body anymore. 50 years, if you live to tell. 50 years is a long time. Yes. So some of them have moved on to new birth and new bodies. And who knows? Maybe in their new bodies they joined Prabhupada's movement. Maybe they were born somewhere in a family of devotees. Who knows how it all came to pass? What can you say? But somehow or other, we know certain, one thing we know certain, that the blessings of the pure devotee don't go in vain. We cannot see exactly how these blessings have acted, but that they have acted, that we know for certain, without a doubt. And thus we see that these blessings are so important and just like the Ganga. When Lord Vamanadeva appeared before Bali Maharaj as a little dwarf, a brahmachari, a very small brahmachari, beautiful also, extremely young, beautiful, young boy, dressed in deer skin, straw belt, water pot, stick also, yes, and these sandals with the padukas, these ones with the peg in between the toes, a parasol even. Then he came like this, so Pakka Brahmachari. And Lord Vamanadeva looked upon him and he saw such a nice. Here's Bali Maharaj, my devotee. And Bali Maharaj saw that Brahmachari, and Brahmachari said, I've come to make some charity. As a Brahmachari, this is my occupation. Bali Maharaj said, yes, of course. My dear Brahmachari, whatever you desire. Whatever you wish, if you want, I'll give you a planet. No. Brahmachari said, no, I'm just a Brahmachari. What are my needs? What will I do with the planet? As a Brahmachari, my needs are very simple. I just need 3 steps of land so that I can lie down. Alright, then take 3 steps of land. So the Brahmachari took 2 steps, but he grew in size and took the whole universe, as we remember. And with his toe, he cracked the shell of the universe. The universe is one of many universes, and the many universes cluster together, and they're floating in the causal ocean. So a drop of water from the causal ocean entered the universe, and this drop of ocean was the Ganga. And as the Ganga came into the universe and came down, the demigods understood. They understood the water that comes from the transcendental realm outside of this universe. That water, now touched by the tip of the toe of the Lord, which has become fully purified and transcendental, this water is now coming to bless the entire universe. And the demigods were thinking, how can we be part of this mercy? And the demigods, they carried kumbhas, pots, beautifully decorated with gold, and they caught that Ganga water, and they carried it on their heads, and they brought it downwards. Then they released the Ganga again after at the frontier of the heavenly regions. And Ganga fell downwards to the middle planetary systems, and of course we remember was caught by Lord Shiva on his head. and subsequently stayed in the hair of Lord Shiva, because Lord Shiva, who is very powerful, he caught the Ganga so that it wouldn't break planet Earth, on his head. But then he decided to keep it there a little longer, so he locked the Ganga in his hair. But then Maharaj Bhagirathi, who had performed great austerities, he prayed to Lord Shiva to release the Ganga. So then, Lord Shiva could no longer keep the Ganga and had to let it go in answer to the prayer of a devotee. And then the Ganga followed Maharaj Bhagirathi, who rode on his horse to the ocean. And thus Ganga fulfilled its course on planet Earth. But that was still not all. Ganga went down further. On planet Earth, though, before we go down, on planet Earth, though, there were many people who knew about the power of Ganga. And thus they went to bathe in the river. They went there for the Kumbh Mela, and still, every year, 22 million people assemble. How can so many people come? But 22 million people come in 1 month and stay in camps that are very organized. In India. It's amazing. It's a miracle. Kumbh Mela. And people are bathing in the sacred waters. And thus, they came blessed. Then Ganga goes down further as the Bhogavati and comes in the lower planetary systems also. There, nobody knows what this Bhogavati is. It's just water. It's water. Some water. You know. Some fall in it by accident. You know. Some are rather. Some throw it at others. Whatever they do with that water, somehow or other, whoever gets touched by it, even in the lower planetary systems, they get the benefit. As such, that mercy of the Lord that came as a drop of the causal ocean and touched the tip of the toe of the Lord, that mercy is purifying the three worlds. But that's not all. When we look a little closer at this situation, then we see that the demigods, whatever mercy was there, they thought about it deeply and very intelligently. And they became active agents of that mercy, rather than just being passive receivers. Those in the middle planetary system, they became just conscious passive receivers. And then in the lower planetary systems, they became accidental passive receivers. In this way, there were three categories of people relating to the mercy. And as they were relating in different ways to the mercy, they also got benefit in a different way. The demigods who were receiving that mercy and at the same time distributing it, they were getting the most mercy themselves. They're getting the most benefit of it. And those who just somehow consciously were receiving that mercy and went to take their bath in the Ganga, knowing well that Ganga is purified, they got more mercy than those who were bathing without having any knowledge at all. Although everyone got mercy. In the same way, when it comes to blessings of the sages, those who consciously take advantage of these blessings of the sages, those who are consciously doing so, they become like extensions, like the instruments of the sages. And thus, they get the full blessings. Those who receive the blessings knowingly and take advantage of them, they are making great advancement. And even those who don't know what it's all about, but somehow or other come in touch, they also get the blessings. And thus we are seeing in front of us the Sankirtan movement. We're seeing the movement that we are part of, and we see all these three. We see the devotees who are somehow or other becoming the instruments, who either distribute the mercy or take care of the mercy to keep it in a state of purity. The caretakers of the mercy, who consciously carry, who children, psst, hey, psst, children, it is too noisy. We love you, but you are too noisy. So, our movement also has these categories. Those who are the caretakers, who are consciously looking after this mercy, who are consciously preserving it, who are consciously making it available in various ways. Then there are those who seek the benefit of this mercy. Those who somehow or other look at the blessings, but they are more concerned with their own advancement. And they're thinking about their own spiritual life. And they're thinking about, how can I be benefited? They are the second class. And the third class, who is affected by this movement, is a class who is kind of, has no idea what came. I went to Woodstock in Poland to the festival of Indrajula Maharaj, known as the Village of Peace. Actually, it is part of a much larger festival. It's a big music festival, intense music, I must say, which comes on a very large stage with huge tower speakers and with very intense sounds, something like a little louder and for a long time. So instead of walking there like Hare Krishna. But and then there are 400,000 young people. So it's a lot. Then you have different camps, right? You have on the outside of the festival ground different camps. And one of those camps is the Village of Peace of Indrajula Maharaj. Next door is the beer camp, which is twice as big as the Village of Peace, actually, to be honest, right? Then in the middle, there are all the young people just sleeping outside and camping and so on in the dust. And there are pipes, water pipes coming out of the ground, and you just squirt water. It's summer. You squirt water. And people, everyone, instead of going to a bathroom or anything like that, they just walk under the squirting water. It cools you down. It sort of washes off the sweat and whatever. And I saw this one man, a young man, fat, in only shorts, right, lying on the ground in the mud. And never have I seen a human being as close to a pig as that one. He was 99% there. The only thing that is still different was his nose. I tell you. Incredible. I mean, I was looking at him from Hare Krishna. Then, yes, but in the Village of Peace, there was the reggae band playing Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and it drowned out the other sound, and there were many things going on. At one point, I saw Jagai and Madai. And I mean, they were perfect. I was going to sign them up for the movie. Serious. I mean, you know, they were perfect. I mean, Jagai, he had dreadlocks, and he had tied in his dreadlocks many empty beer cans, like Samson. Whereas Madai, he had taken a cardboard box, and he had made holes in it, and a big hole for his head, and then he had put bottles, empty bottles, beer bottles, upside down, and he was wearing that like a crown. They were the perfect cast, absolutely the best. So they walked in, and anyway, somehow or other I got caught up in the Village of Peace and I lost sight of them for a while. But a bit later, I saw how Jagai was feeding Madai papadums. They had a bit of style and he was feeding papadums, you know. Crown and bottles and beer cans. And I just saw the potency of that Village of Peace, right? And how it was like the Bhogavati going down into those regions of ignorance where people live like pigs. Believe it or not, they do. And every day there was a Rati Yatra going out from that Village of Peace. Through the crowd of 400,000, every day that Rati Yatra goes out. And whoever is there, no one escapes the mercy of Lord Gauranga in that festival. No one. And yes, there are, of course, all kinds of performances of a main stage and so on. And so many people, not knowing what hit them, get so much transcendental mercy. So in this way we see how this movement exists in three ways. And we also are part of it in one of those three. We can see where we belong, whether we are one of the pigs or whether we are one of the demigods, I don't know, or somewhere in between. You may figure that out yourself. Somehow or other, that good fortune has come. And it all came because of the blessings of Srila Prabhupada, who came alone. He came alone and carried blessings. And it's through these blessings that everything changed. Because he prayed, you see. It is said in the Bhagavatam that in the age of Kali, no one is pious. There are no pious souls. And therefore, no one is taking to Krishna consciousness on the strength of his own piety. There may be people who are religious. That may be plenty of them. But no one will take to devotional service on his own strength. No one. No one comes to devotional service just because they were so pious. No. Not in the age of Kali. It is mentioned that in the age of Kali, we only come because of the prayer of a pure devotee. It is because the pure devotee prays. When the pure devotee prays, then Krishna will change his heart. Will change the heart of the conditioned souls. Krishna, as the super soul, will interfere in the heart of a person, and suddenly someone who really didn't want to have anything to do with Krishna consciousness, how much is that? And sometimes book distributors see that, you see that change. You know, your faith, a person who really like is not, and then suddenly, as if the sun breaks through the clouds, something happens. with that person, as if he get hit from something from above by some radio waves, and he transfers it. Well, how much is it? Then we say, well, you know, we're not selling them. We only ask the donation for the painting. Because but the last person, when he heard about the work that we are doing, he spontaneously became so moved. He just turned his whole, he took his wallet out of his pocket, turned it upside down and said, please, take it all. So, I couldn't even count it. It was a whole bundle. Anyway, do it again. Anyway, like this, somehow or other, the devotees know how to get the person the maximum blessings. I take everything that he has and offer it to Krishna, instead of it being offered to Maya, and instead of it being engaged in all kinds of illusory activity. So in this way, this movement is such a benediction. And it is all due to the prayer of the pure devotees. Many pure devotees have prayed for this movement. When Krishna came to Bhagavata Sutadeva, he brought with him the parampara. He brought with him. Vyasadeva. He brought with him Narada Muni, and he also brought with him Sukadeva Goswami. It means he brought the parampara, he brought Srimad Bhagavatam. He basically brought the essence of everything. Prabhupada brought the very same thing, although so much later. Prabhupada faithfully brought the very same thing they got so many thousands of years ago. Prabhupada also brought it down. Again, Srimad Bhagavatam. Here it is. And in there is Vyas and Narada and Sukadeva. They're all there. So Prabhupada, they came with Prabhupada, and their prayers came with Prabhupada. As the prayers are timeless. The prayers of saintly personalities are eternal. They're transcendental, so they don't wear out. Therefore, this movement carries the prayers of all these personalities. Prabhupada carried the prayers of Narada Muni. He carried the prayers of Vyasadeva. He carried the prayers of Sukadeva and of so many others. But each time there's a new generation, prayers are added. Prayers are added. Prabhupada added his own prayers. And now Prabhupada's followers are adding prayers. And each Vaishnava who is adding prayers is adding these prayers on the strength of his service. And thus it is the service of the Vaishnavas that creates the blessings. By doing service for Krishna, one becomes the possessor of blessings. And in this way, the world transforms. It said, in this way the world is purified by the dust of the feet of the pure devotees. And the entire world is delivered. And whether people want or not, it doesn't matter. Because the pure devotees want. They want. And that's what really matters. They want. Whether knowingly or unknowingly, the Ganga acts. Knowingly or unknowingly, the movement of Lord Chaitanya penetrates everywhere and transforms. And that is why it's most wonderful. We may have, somehow or other in this temple, we have all kinds of neighbors. Right? If you look sort of to your left, then there's a cross over there. And when we were listening 15 minutes earlier, there was that familiar song of other neighbors, the ones with the beards, and so on. What can we say? As we hear them, they hear us. There's no doubt about it. And thus, they will also come. They will also come, eventually. Maybe not now. Maybe not this life. But who knows? Maybe they'll come back in the next life as the son of a Vaishnava. When your son starts to grow a beard, then you know. In this way, this Sankirtan movement has come to bring everyone, either in this life or in the next. And that is the idea. So, from this temple, at the hill here on top of Phoenix, the mercy is flowing down in all directions. And of course, the devotees are making plans. They're making different plans. How can we somehow reach the people? Sometimes we do it openly. Jai Jagannath, Jai Jagannath. We pull our Jagannath to the chariots. Other times we do it like secret agents. 007, you know. Food relief for the hungry. Social work, you know. Whatever it may be, whether we are distributing this mercy directly or whether we use the 007 tactics, right? Whatever it may be, somehow or other, it comes from here. Because Srila Prabhupada is here. He is heading it up. And that's why he's sitting there on his glorious throne, very effulgent, presiding over the assembly. And we should not think that Srila Prabhupada is not present in his bhakti. There are many occasions where Srila Prabhupada has appeared in dreams and made it clear that his murti is really potent and not just a statue. Prabhupada is here, and in this way, from here, from this hill, rivers of mercy are flowing down. We can be like the demigods, or we can be like the people of the middle planetary systems and just take advantage of the mercy ourselves. Come on Sunday and take some prasad. Or we can be like those of the lower planetary regions who don't know what actually is going on and somehow get the mercy also. It's up to us. Everyone gets benefit, but those who just become the instruments of Prabhupada, they get the most. They get the most. Okay, with that, I thank you very much for listening to me. And if any of you have a question, or if you have any sheet with questions, look at that. If we have all the answers, it means
we must be fully absorbed in Srimad. That is only possible if you're not just reading it, but if you're also implementing it. So today we're reading about this king, Bhavanaswa, about this Brahmana, Shukadev, who both worshipped the sages who were great devotees very nicely, and in this way satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, let us find out who is Prabhupada. Let us read everything there is to read about his life. There's so many biographies about Prabhupada. We can read them all. Why not? It's the sort of thing we can read very quickly, because easy reading. And it's just so rich. And by doing so, by absorbing ourselves in the life of the saintly person, we're getting the blessings. Like that. It has not yet been understood by the world who Prabhupada is. Just at the time of Muhammad, when he appeared, in Mecca, no one understood. They didn't see him at all as a prophet. They saw him as some sort of heretic, actually, and they drove him out. First, he stayed there for some years and preached, because he had a very rich uncle who was influential. But when the uncle died, then it was over, and then he had to go. But somehow or other, he went to Medina, and then he convinced the king of Medina. And then they got like an army together. And they started to attack the caravans that came from Mecca and subjugate them and force Islam upon them. So that's how it started and how it maybe also continues, I don't know. But the sword is still popular, I think. Whatever it may be, but ultimately, it must come in its pure form to Krishna consciousness. It all comes there. That's really it. So that's why we're on top. So still no questions. Okay, yes.
What's the difference between, or which one is most significant, worship of the saintly persons or worship of?
Or worship of?
Personality of God.
Which is more important, worship of the saintly personalities or worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Aradhanam sarve sam Krishna aradhanam parantasman paradam devi priyamam samarchanam. Lord Shiva speaking to Parvati on the Padma Purana is saying that of all worshipable beings, Lord Vishnu is the most worshipable. And more worshipable even than him is the Tadir, is the devotee of the Lord. He's more worshipable still. Tadir Samarachana. So that's Padma Purana. Is the answer. We go through the devotee. Because alone going to Krishna without blessings, we fall short. We know that very well. Even in front of the mirror, we fall short. Yeah. Want to speak in front of the Supreme Lord. You know what I'm saying? Even when we turn to the mirror, then, you know, We know the truth. We know it. Want to speak in front of the Supreme Lord.
You know, there's a book of Hermann Hesse, who was a good writer. And he has, it's called The Journey to the Morning Land. And it's interesting, it's about a group of people, they're traveling, and they have a servant. And the servant is carrying the bags and making all the arrangements and so on. But then, actually, they're on a journey seeking for spiritual life. And finally, one of them, who is sincere and who is really searching, he begins to realize that the most advanced personality in the whole assembly is the servant, who is carrying the bags for everyone else and so on. And at one point, he realizes that the servant is the master. And the next day, the servant disappears. Anyway, our friend carries on his spiritual practices and is trying to act like a servant himself. And in this way, he has learned a lesson. However, in due course of time, he makes mistakes. He's disrespectful, he makes mistakes. And then, one day, he is captured by some people as if being arrested. And he is brought into a court. And this court is, he's on trial. And as he's on trial, he is there, and the entire bench is sitting there, many judges. And they say, is the self-accused, they call him the self-accused, not the accused, he said, is the self-accused ready to be judged in absence of the chairman? He said, yes, yes. Okay, agreed. Just then, a voice comes from the back, and it's the chairman, and he walks in, and he says, no, I'll preside over this case in person. Oh, everyone is elated. And when he looks, he sees that it is the servant who is sitting there as the senior most of the assembly. And then it is his turn, as the self-accused, to act as the prosecutor and to point out his own faults and all those grievous offenses that he has made in his spiritual life. And he stands there, and he is trying to be honest, and he's trying to confess his weaknesses and all the big mistakes that he makes. And the judge, the chairman says, all those things are not so important. They're not so important. It is true, it is a transgression, but can be overlooked, can be forgiven. So they go through the whole list of all the faults that he sees in himself, that he's always known that he had, and knows very well all the mistakes that he made. And each one is dismissed as not such a big thing. But then they get into the faults that he didn't acknowledge. And they go into a whole list of faults that he actually never acknowledged, and that are much more serious. And all kinds of stumbling blocks in spiritual life. And thus we can understand that ultimately the sages, we know ourselves in front of the mirror, and we know our weaknesses. We know. And yet the sages, they know us better. 100 times better, 1,000 times better. They know weaknesses in us that we never thought of. In the same way, we, in front of the mirror, know our strength also. We know where our greatness is as well. We know our talents. We know what we could be. We know where we can excel. We know it, maybe in Excel. Yeah. Yes, we know. whether we can excel. But the sages, they are even going beyond that. They know a greater path for us than the greatest path that we know. That is the sages. Therefore, we must go to the sages, because through the mercy of the sages, we come up and up and up beyond anything we could have ever imagined that we would do. And they live with us, and they are with us, and they're in our lives and share it with us. And in this way, they are here where we are also. And thus, by the mercy of the sages, we come to another platform before Krishna. And then we can approach Krishna in a new way, in a way we could never before. Then we are like new personalities before Krishna, transformed in this way. Thank you. Nice question. Other questions? Vrindavan, in the morning, we sing that song, Viva Varishis. Well, that was a tradition which was started in 1980, 2 years after Srila Prabhupada, or 3 years after Srila Prabhupada left. And it was because we used to sing in two times. We used to go to Samadhi and at 4:10 at Mangalarti and sing Guru Bhastakamas. And then we sing it again in the temple. Again Guru Bhastakamas. So then there's discussion, why sing it twice? We sing it once in the Samadhi and then we carry on. So then they consulted. See, the Prabhupada told us that in matters of deity worship, some say it's about deity worship, others say it's about general things, but he told us to consult with Narayana Maharaj at the time. There were many technical questions, issues. Like they didn't know how to put Prabhupada into Samadhi properly, what mantras to chant and so on. So Narayan Maharaj helped to do that. So on this matter they also asked him, and he suggested this, to chant Viva Varishis. And then it was implemented. I was there at the time, so I remember it very, very distinctly. It's a song about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which is where we're approaching Krishna in the morning. Viva Varishesha Aloka Pravesha. It's at the beginning of the day, as we are awakening, we're beginning to glorify Krishna. And remembering in all the different glories of Krishna. Bodo Hari Hari Mukunda Murari. Begin to glorify the name of the Lord. Remember him as Mukunda, giver of liberation. Murari, killer of the worthy. Rama Krishna, Hayagriva. Krishna and Balaram, and also Hayagriva, the Lord, in that form of the horse. So, like this, Narsimha Bhavan, Shimabhusu. Yes, amazing. That's all. I guess it was Krishna's plan. Somehow or other, it's very serious. So in Vrindavan. But first, but the devotees don't go to Prabhupada Samadhi after shame, 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 Undam. What can I say? Shame, shame, shame.
he must go in Vrindavan. Ah, yes. Because, you know, Prabhupada's samadhi is there. It's surcharged with mercy. As this is the closest you can physically get to him ever, those who have met him in person. One should not miss that party for nothing. I don't understand. I pray. So far, so good. So far, I'm not missing it. I pray that I may never miss it. And then, yes, we can chant. Your relationship. First the devotee, then the worship.
All right, we thank you.
Hare Krishna. So, I guess we'll meet again at the time of Rati Yatra. Tomorrow I'll be in Peter Mansburg, and on Sunday I'll be in Khartoum. Monday on the way to Prague. And then do a tour of Eastern Europe. It's at the moment -4. So it's good that it's cooling down. All right, but March is just around the corner. Yep. And some of you may go to the Holy Dawn. Then I'll see you there. That will also be in February. I heard that a lot of devotees from Durban are going around the 15th of February to Vrindavan. Is it true?